Welcome to Beamercast number 17. It is February 22nd, my birthday, I might add.
Oh, damn. Happy birthday, Gabe.
Thanks. We've got a bunch of stuff for you. BMW's M3 ALMS or GT2 car is out. We've seen the photos, and that will be racing at Sebring. We're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about a few other things tonight as well. The 5 Series Touring, the M1, and I think just generally speaking, we're going to go over the upcoming Geneva Auto Show. So stay tuned. So we're back with this week, Michael. I would love to hear your thoughts about this new GT2 car, the M3 GT2, because I have a feeling, I know you've been close to the program, you've been following it quite a bit. I have a feeling you've got some opinions on this thing, the way it looks.
Of course I have some opinions, Gabe. That's what I'm for. I'm the bad egg in the bunch, you know? Obviously, I'm a big fan of BMW and BMW racing, Ray Hall Letterman, and for the most part, I love the look of the car, except for it's missing a key piece of heritage, in my opinion. It's missing the motorsports stripes. They cannot be found. I've looked all over these images, and I can't find them.
Well, okay, so I will say, to BMW's credit, they technically have the motorsports stripes on the M logo, but other than that, I would agree with you. And as somebody who is who's been a big fan of BMW liveries in the past, and there's been some great ones, I'm left a little wanting in this new car. I will say that it's very clear to me that it's sort of latching on to the Joy campaign for what it's worth and whatever that is, in the U.S. at least. And we see some new sponsors. I mean, we've got Escort seems to be a bigger sponsor this year. We've got Crown Plaza as what seems to be the main title sponsor. So you know, I think obviously BMW is paying the bills, so to speak.
Yeah, paying the bills definitely. I like the Joy. I like that on the side and how it fades to Joy is dynamic, Joy is this, Joy is that. I think that's nice, and it goes well along with the marketing campaign that they're unleashing on all of us, for better or for worse. Actually, the tunnel commercial is fantastic. It's probably one of the best car commercials I've seen in ages.
And I agree. Totally agree.
You know, and I love it. But, you know, as an aside, I just miss the stripes. That's my personal opinion. Otherwise, the car looks great. It's white. It's clean. It looks good. And you can definitely differentiate both cars by, you know, one has the red rear wing and the red mirrors. So that's nice. And the other one with the blue. And I think it's great. Dunlop's on board again for another season of developing tires. So, you know, BMW's got a really great partner for tires going on there. And I'm looking forward to this season, and I'm sure they're going to compete and do real well.
So now that that's out of the way, I want to not only welcome everybody back this week, but also apologize. We're having a slight technical difficulty with our recording setup, and unless I manage to pull off some sort of miracle in
magic
in post-production, you are hearing me out of the left side of your stereo. So just imagine me sitting to the left of you and Michael is sitting on top of you.
Hey now,
Michael, you are in stereo. So I don't know how else to put it, but, we'll have this fixed up. We're actually working on the quality of our recording. And we're upping it. In fact, we've made an investment. It's just sorting out some of the electrical gremlins. We only had a few moments few opportunities this week to record, so we figured we'd actually do a show with this setup as it stands. But I think it does sound better, so we're certainly improving and getting there.
We're working on it.
So a couple other things, and. You know, Geneva's right around the corner, and by the time you hear this, it's just a couple days away right now. We're very excited about it. Obviously, there's been a lot of rumors around a couple cars. First and foremost is a potential debut of the 1M or M1 in concept form. And I know that there's some debate going on right now whether or not this is going to happen. But if we do see the M1, or whatever it's eventually called, I do believe that it will be officially called a concept, but in name only. If we do in fact see it. But Michael, your thoughts? I mean, should we expect to see it?
I've been debating this. You know, sources reporting that it's coming. You know, BMW does these things as unannounced. I've been told by several people that there's supposedly an unnamed concept car going to be shown in Geneva because it's such a large market for, you know, Europe to launch vehicles in. And but at the same time, I'm a little hesitant to go and say that, yes, the M1 is coming or the 1M is coming to Geneva, because I almost feel like using the New York show to launch the car in the number one M market would make a little bit more sense. Sort of how they did the X5 and X6 Ms.
But we do know that in the past, BMW has launched these cars in Europe, and it's always been the quote unquote concept where you've got a BMW sort of giving you a little elbow, a little nudge, nudge, wink, wink, you know, air quotes, this is a concept. When we all know it's not. But I know Geneva's gotten previous M concepts. I know Frankfurt's got them. I don't remember a single one of them ever coming to the U.S.
Yeah, not in concept form. You're right on the money with that. And that's why I still, you know, deep down want to see it in Geneva. And we were hoping to be there, but some stuff came up and unfortunately we can't be. But yeah, I would love to see this car sooner than later and see what it's really all going to be about, because we've been speculating on this for God, who knows how long at this point. And it's really just an enthusiast car. It's going to hit us really, really nicely.
Well, it's a car that we have had so many people ask us about, so many people interested in. This is the one, I think, that everybody has been waiting for. And even if it's, you know, not everybody's going to go out and buy this car. It's going to start off around 50K. Not everybody's in a position to do that. But what it does is it gives BMW that image. You know, it gives us all this product and this idea to shoot for or to have in our head when we think of M, when we think of BMW. And I think for a lot of us, especially a lot of us who are younger enthusiasts, and I know I'm a year older, so I'm not sure if I'm technically in that category anymore, but, it gives us something to relate to a little bit. You know, the M3 has gotten fat. It's gotten expensive. $60,000 is a lot of money to start, you know? Even if it's only 10 grand less, you know, it feels like it's a little bit more in reach for some people. And I think that's really important. M, you know, it shouldn't be about super high-end luxurious performance cars. You know, they need to have a product that is, you know, maybe it's not within the reach of everybody, but it's a little closer, and maybe that dream is a little bit less far-fetched.
Yeah, no, and the other neat thing to think about is too is that, you know, we're just talking about the GT2 car, and BMW's M3 is really a real four-seater. It fits real humans, four people, you know, unlike like the Porsche 911, where you can't fit four real humans in that. So BMW with the GT2 has always been fighting that battle of having a bigger car than everyone else. So their surface area is bigger. And so they end up hitting a wall with a top speed, not based on motor, not based on gearing, but based on aero. And I would love to see a 1 Series, because it's a little smaller, be a GT2 car. I have no idea if that's possible, but just this M1 makes me think, ooh, MGT2.
Well, I think it's interesting. M1. I think it's very interesting because you had BMW just recently announced, BMW Motorsport, that they're going to bring out a Z4, a dedicated Z4 race car that's a fixed roof with a V8 engine. And it seems like, at least, it's not based in production. You know, you'd think that they would have waited a little bit, and I'm sure wheels were in motion too long ago for it to coincide with the 1M, but you think they would have waited and made that 1M your sort of entry-level race car? It seems perfect for it.
Yeah, really, it does. It's ideal. I mean, I can't wait to actually take that thing out and tear it up, but that's a whole nother story.
Yeah, I have a feeling that it's going to be my new it car for the year. I mean, you know, to some degree, and we talked about it last show, that V8 and the M3 is something that is just incredible. It's something that is going to be forever lost, I think, in terms of automotive production going forward, and it'll be very unique. But, you know, as much as that inline six with two turbos is going to be relatively familiar to us for a long time to come, I'm sure, you know, the fact that this one series is lighter, it's a smaller package, it's a little bit more nimble. I mean, these are all things that, I mean, that to me is what an M car really truly is about. And I think, you know, it's that precision and control that the M3 has, but you've got to expect the M1 with the same suspension setup, generally speaking, power that is maybe 50 horsepower less, maybe 60, 70, but with a lot less weight behind it. You know, it could be 400 pounds lighter. Could be 500 pounds lighter.
It could be in the end, and it's always interesting. And it's so interesting to compare these cars too, because we're talking about performance models and, you know, these little itty-bitty things that seem like a lot, like torque, you know, torque at the motor versus torque at the wheels and things along those lines, I think sometimes gets lost in translation. Where you have the V8 in the M3, everyone complains it has no torque. But in reality, it has a lot of torque for what it is because of the gearing. BMW is able to get away with lower gearing because you can rev it so far. And I think also that plays a role in the naturally aspirated versus the turbo battle. I think the gearing is going to be a little different for actual track time and using it functionally on a racetrack when you go to the true turbo setup.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's pretty exciting. I mean, I think Dr. Kai Segler has brought a renewed level of enthusiasm to M, and I'm really excited about it. I think we all sort of took a big gulp when we saw the X6M and the X5M, and I know, Michael, you don't hate the cars after driving them. I'm gonna have
X5M
in the near future to test for a week, and it's still it's been tough to swallow, you know, because I mean I think we're all so used to M meaning something to enthusiasts and being something that is, you know, very authentic. And this is getting back to that.
Yeah, it's definitely it's going to be raw. You know, that's the difference, I think. It's not going to be as gizmo controlled. But we shall see. We have no idea what gizmos are in this thing yet. You know? So we'll see. But speaking of the X6, we have a post about the BMW Performance Parts releasing the X6, as we had hinted at, you know, late last year in our discussion with Eric Ryle about BMW Performance was looking into developing more of the X6 products, more of the Z4 products. And it's kind of, I think the X6 BMW Performance Parts car here looks pretty aggressive. Mm-hmm. And
I think so too, but it certainly looks different even. I mean, you've got those little flaps in the back, you've got the black trim and these really aggressive looking black wheels. It's got its own look.
Yeah, it does. It's mean, and it doesn't look like the X6M, which is kind of nice too. It's a real departure from that.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. In fact, I was going to mention, you know, that specifically. It looks very different than the X5M. If only that big wheel gap would be taken away. I'm looking at the picture right now. Oh, right, it's a crossover though.
yes, it's an SAC SAC.
It's a SAC. I thought it was a SAV. Well, regardless of what it is, it is a very fast car. I have gone on record in saying that I absolutely loved the X6 when I had it, and this is coming from somebody who hated the idea when I first saw it. It's ridiculous, but it's ridiculous in all the right ways. So. Be fun to see these things out there as well.
And then also at Geneva will be the official, air quotes, debut of the 5 Series, because I think it's debuted since November.
A lot of air quotes recently on the show. It's true though. It's funny because I mean we've seen this 5 Series on American soil. I know, Michael, you've seen it. You've gotten up close to it.
No, oh, it's beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous.
A lot of folks have seen it. We've got people who have driven it, yet it's not, you know, again, air quotes, officially been unveiled to the public. And finally in Geneva, you're going to be able to, as a normal person, walk up to it and kick the tires and hopefully not scratch the wheels.
Yeah. And sales start officially can commence on sometime in June. So
in the U.S. market.
In the U.S. market,
March in Europe?
I'm not sure on that, to be honest with you. But speaking of Europe, they're going to end up with a wagon, and it doesn't look like we are.
Well, and that, and so we've heard, and I've heard specifically, that we will not see a wagon. And, well, I shouldn't say that. I've been told in no uncertain terms the wagon doesn't make a whole lot of sense at this point. And as much as some folks at BMW USA would like to see it here, personally, it doesn't sell, and it's pretty expensive. In fact, we have a piece that's going to be going up next week about wagons in general. You know, one of the problems with the 5 Series in particular is you're looking at $65,000 for a well-equipped 535i.
XI,
which is the only model they come in. And that is an extremely expensive vehicle compared to what else is out there. Now, I will say, I think it's worth it. I personally would prefer it over an X5. In fact, I would prefer it over an X6, over any crossover. I think it's fantastic. But a lot of folks out there who are making the money to be able to spend that much on a car, a lot of them are older, and a lot of them don't necessarily have the best or most fond memories of wagons when they were kids, and they were kids in the, you know, in the 60s, many of them, maybe in the 70s. And there's a certain stigma attached to wagons to that generation. I find it interesting that, and this is based on some conversations I've had with folks at BMW, that may not always be the case. I mean, you've got people from my generation, Michael's generation, that don't have that same stigma when it comes to wagons. And, you know, maybe there's an opportunity, maybe not this generation, but maybe next generation, maybe another 10 years, another 8 years for BMW to consider bringing the wagon back.
Yeah, it's true. It's definitely true. And I'm just going to correct myself. I said XI before, but there's no more XIs. They're X drives. So I just wanted to make that correction there. I don't want to confuse people. There's no 535 XI. It's a 535i with X drive in sport wagon form. No, I completely agree. Having owned a E61 wagon myself and loved every single minute of it, I missed that car to death. It's a fine product, but it's very expensive. It was a definite price delta over the X5 at the time I had it, but it was more practical for me, and it was better with fuel consumption than an X5. So to me, in the end, it was a net, you know. But not everyone thinks that way, I guess, and they all return to the family truckster of the wonderful, wonderful days of past.
Well,
wood paneling and puke green, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, you think of National Lampoon's Vacation, I mean, at least I do when I think of the old school wagon. And of course, we're being pretty U.S. centric here, but you know, it's something that's really, I think it's funny how Detroit's missteps have continued to cast a shadow over the automotive market in the U.S. I mean, I think wagons. I think wagons. You know, a good example. Another example. Diesel. I mean, the spectacular failure of diesel and diesel engines, brought to you by Chrysler, Ford, and mostly GM in the 70s and 80s, is why one of the big reasons why diesel is not popular in the U.S.
I love GM, Gabe.
Well, you know, I'm glad that you do, because there's not a lot of love for GM around these parts.
I love GM because I own part of it.
Oh, well, that's true. We all have to. In fact, I would say it's been a good investment. I actually had I have in the past month, I've had two Camaros as rental cars, Camaro SS and a standard V6 Camaro. And they weren't that bad.
Compared to what?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I mean, the Camaro, the standard Camaro, 300 horsepower, V6. 6-speed automatic, head paddles in the back, or more like switches. But, you know, this car, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. I mean, it wallowed. The suspension was, you know, I felt like I was tied down by rope. But at the same time, it was dramatically better than what came before. It was a lot of fun. I could defeat all the traction and stability control, which you really have to work on. By the way, you really have to know what you're doing, especially in the SS. But, you know, for 23, 24 grand, and this one was optioned up to probably about 25, 26. It was a pretty fast car. And, you know, it's something that is a lot of fun. The SS, on the other hand, is insane. I mean, it's a lot more weight, 426 horsepower. Again, like 31 grand, though. Yeah, even with the automatic transmission, you can defeat all the stability control and whatnot, and you can have yourself tire smoking fun for 31 grand.
It's not bad. It's not bad. I actually was contemplating going to test drive a Mitsubishi Lancer, the sport hatch one they have coming out with the Rally Sport.
Yeah. I mean, I personally think it's a pretty ugly car, but I love the idea.
Yeah, it's the idea. That's really what it was about for me.
Yeah, and I mean, I love the old Impreza wagon. I always thought that was one of the best cars on the market, period. I don't know, something strange about the whole flat four and wagon, all-wheel drive seemed kind of cool.
Yeah, flat four is a throwback to the old VW Beetle and the old Porsches. It's good times.
Absolutely.
But we're moving forward to the future, right? We're going back to the past, and now we're moving to the future, and BMW's to build the electric Isetta in Leipzig.
So this is, I think it's a huge, huge deal. BMW is going to be launching a sub-brand, and they are creating something that is very different. It's very new. I mean, consider the fact that BMW, over the course of their past 50 years, has produced nothing but internal combustion engines for production.
Yeah, it's true, because they've only had a few of those electric cars for the Munich Olympics and then a couple other projects here and there, but nothing really for production.
Ever. Yeah. 80 years even. So, I mean, this isn't just a new product. This is like a seismic shift for BMW. This is not going from metal to composite material on the front fenders, or, you know, rear-wheel drive to all-wheel drive. I mean, this is as big of a change as you can make as a manufacturer. And they are not just dipping their toe in the water. You know, they are actually creating a sub-brand. They are putting a ton of money behind this. And as a small, relatively small manufacturer, this is a huge, huge gamble for them.
Definitely a huge gamble. And the other interesting part to me was that little company, SGL Carbon, that they had, you know, invested in earlier last year in 2009, you know, they had signed this joint agreement and things like that, and it kind of went under the radar. But this is going to be a key part of the future of BMW, is going to be this carbon fiber manufacturer.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like they're going to be producing carbon fiber clutches at the BMW plant Landshut, which is a great name. And other components for the new vehicle. Carbon fiber clutches. I mean, that's interesting.
Really interesting.
Yeah. It's gonna be fun to follow.
Yeah, and the Isetta is supposed to come before the first half of this decade, which would be 2015. But some people are saying that it's going to come to market a little sooner than that. That be introduced in 2013 as a 2014 model. So.
Well, as much as BMW is on the bleeding edge, there are other companies out there who are even more on the bleeding edge. And we took a product from one of those companies out last week for a drive around Chicago, and that would be Tesla. And I got a chance to get behind the Roadster Sport. This is the new sport model of the Tesla Roadster, which has been out for over a year now. And spent a good deal of time with the thing in and around the city of Chicago. And if you haven't read the review, definitely take a look.
It's a fantastic review. Fantastic.
Well, it's something that's entirely new, I think, for me at least. This is the first time, Michael. I know you've driven the Mini-E. I have not driven the Mini-E. This is my first electric vehicle that I've driven. And blown away, you know, like the normal adjectives that you'd use for something that's just an incredible car, it doesn't really work here. I mean, this was like scrambling like all perceptions of automobiles for me and sort of rearranging it. This is so new and so incredible. It's so fast. It sounds so different. And the idea and it's just one of those experiences that will totally change the way you look at cars and change what you think you knew and what you think you like. The Tesla is that good.
And I'm very surprised, to be honest with you, that when Tesla was just getting going and they were developing all these electronics and batteries and drive systems and patenting things, I am really surprised that a major manufacturer didn't buy them up back then.
Well, and Mercedes just, has invested quite a bit of money in Tesla in the past year.
Okay.
So you have to wonder if something's going to happen there eventually.
It would make sense. I mean, without a doubt, they are leaps and bounds ahead of, you know, the current products anyway. I'm not sure what's being developed, but you know what I mean? They're just really so far ahead.
They really are. I mean, if you look at, you know, that article, and I didn't talk about the Active E a whole lot because, you know, the car hasn't come to market yet. It's just sort of concept theoretically at this point. So we did talk about the Mini E instead as a comparison. And, you know, Tesla has, in a smaller car, I might add, you know, 1,800 more battery cells. It is extraordinarily fast, much, much faster. In fact, you know, it's 500 and some pounds lighter than the Mini E. The Mini E 0-60, I don't even know what it is, but I mean, Michael, you've driven it. It's not that fast.
No, it's not. I mean, it's definitely instant torque and it's fun, but it's not going to change your opinion on speed.
Well, Tesla, the Roadster Sport, is fast, 0-60 in 3.7 seconds.
Sub 4. That's crazy.
And the crazy thing about that is, there's no drama really there. And I know some people will say, well, I want drama. I want tire smoke. I want this and that. And you can have that if you really want. But it is incredible because traction control isn't some like archaic, you know, now I'm going to shut off the spark of the engine because you're, you know, and I'm going to apply a brake here and I'm going to do this and that. I mean, it literally just bends the torque curve down a little bit. Just down, just to the point where traction is, you know, just adhered to, you know, just, you're just getting enough. And what it is doing is making sure that there is absolutely no wasted energy whatsoever in the system. Fascinating stuff. It's really, really, you know, again, it's sort of mind bending some of the technology in this car. But even still, I mean, you just punch it 0-60, 3.7 seconds every time. Every single time. You cannot have a bad launch. It's not possible. And the transmission, of course, being an automatic, which you kind of have to have with an electric vehicle, is clearly, you know, drama free.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely a different experience.
Yeah. Not to say it's better. I mean, you know, for me, I'm a manual guy. I, for God's sake, I have an 88 5 Series out in my garage that, you know, requires you to actually lift weights to put in first and second. So, you know, it's not, I'm not telling you this is the future. Everything's going to be like this and it should be like this. It's a different experience. That is incredible. And I will say that it is very, very fun in its own right. And it has every right to be called a sports car.
Awesome. Yeah. And that's one thing I tried to drive home when I wrote about the Mini E, is that you really have to check all of your preconceived notions about driving a car at the door. Otherwise, it's never going to measure up to anything that you've ever driven. It's a completely different experience driving an electric vehicle.
Well, and the Tesla is so fast that it's strange for a couple of reasons. I mean, number one, it's fast. So 3.7 seconds in itself is pretty mind-numbing in terms of speed 0-60. But then the fact that there's no engine sound, you just hit it, and what you hear isn't silence. That's the great thing about it. You hear what you would assume you would hear if you were in a spaceship.
Yeah.
It's this really just, I don't know, it's hard to explain, this like atmospheric, like electric sort of whir that picks up. And it feels, like I say in the article, it feels like the future.
Yeah, it's. I think the easiest way of describing it is when you're a kid, you play with remote control cars. Like you have your car in the driveway and you get the, you gun it and you hear that whiz noise as it goes by.
Yeah.
But it's just significantly more intense.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, again, awesome stuff. I am excited to see what BMW has in as far as electric vehicles. And I know that there's going to be diesel hybrids. There's going to be three cylinders. There's going to be all sorts of really, really fascinating new technology. But I will say, I don't see them producing a purely electric vehicle at the level of Tesla in terms of performance in, I mean, really in the foreseeable future. And I think it's maybe it's not BMW's market, but for God's sake, it's somebody's, because this car is amazing.
It sounds like it. And, you know, just, I know that they're coming out with the sedan version and they're going to price it much cheaper, because I think the car you drove is what, excess of what, 120K?
120 to start, 144 as equipped.
Wow.
You know, the interesting thing is that the original Tesla Roadster had that level of spec, sans the hand-wound engine. I'm not sure what that means, but it's what gives it a little bit extra power. Had that level of spec for like 89,000 or something. And I mean, clearly they were losing money in every single one of them. They had to raise the prices quite a bit. So the Model S, I mean, how they're producing that, you know, wow. I mean, I don't know how they're doing it, but they're basically, they're producing it for like 57,000. Then they're getting the $7,000 government credit, I believe, which basically takes it down to 49 something. But 49 for a 5-passenger sedan, technically 6, because it's actually a sort of a weird hatchback with two.
Yeah, isn't it like 6 or 7? Yeah, right.
It's 7 actually. 7 seats. So it's got 2 in the front, 3 in the back, and then 2 rear-facing jump seats.
Volvo.
Yeah, but you have to be a pretty small kid and a kid that doesn't mind confined spaces.
Not it.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, I don't think either of us are going to be it, because, I've seen the thing. It's not, that doesn't work if you're over 4.5 foot. So, anyway, it's cool. I mean, it's a cool concept. And it was only really brought about by the fact that there is so much space available in the car, because there's no engine, there's no, you know, hulking sort of drivetrain to rob space.
And they're able to package the batteries much smaller.
Yeah, yeah. So this is an electric car that was designed and built from the ground up as an electric car. And there really aren't, to my knowledge, a lot of those out there. I mean, this is going to be...
Man, really Fisker, right?
Yeah. Fisker. Yeah, in fact, I had a chance to look at the Fisker at the Chicago Auto Show. They were there. In fact, I believe they're only going to Chicago, LA, and potentially New York. Had a chance to get inside the Fisker, just get all around it. The Fisker is actually a hybrid. It's akin to the Volt.
Right.
So there is an engine, but the engine powers the electric motor, and that is what in turn drives the wheels. So, you know, there is combustion in that car. It's a little bit different, but I will say, the Model S Tesla I've seen in person, gorgeous car. The Fisker Karma is, I would have to say, better looking, and in fact, probably one of the best looking four-door sedans I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, it's definitely gorgeous. And Fisker used to design cars for BMW. So,
well, he did. In fact, can you name the last car he designed for BMW?
The last car he designed, wasn't that the Z8?
It was indeed. He designed the Z8, and if I remember right, he then moved on to Aston.
Yeah, and designed one of the most beautiful cars ever created.
Was it from the, it was the Vantage, right?
Vantage, yeah.
Yeah. And then from there, I believe, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, that he was actually employed by Tesla to design the Model S.
I think you're right. And then they had that big, long, drawn-out battle of who came up with what.
Well, yeah, there's a lawsuit that's in there somewhere, but... we won't go into that. They've obviously, he got an enormous amount of financial backing. Fisker is a pretty, let's just say he's, He's a very eloquent guy. He clearly has some grand ambitions, and we wish him well because I think it's a beautiful car. And you know, I love the idea of these small automakers coming up and producing things that rival or challenge the status quo.
Couldn't agree with you more. I'm all about competition.
Yeah. So, with that said, there's one other thing I wanted to mention that was posted on the site just this past week. The 5 Series, and we've got another piece on the classic BMWs, and I personally love these pieces. It was written by Saad, and it is all about the early years of the 5 Series.
Yeah, he's did a great job researching all the information and presenting us with a whole bunch of facts and just tidbits of, you know, where BMWs come from and really how it's influenced everything we see now. And it's great to go back to the roots of where BMW started and where we get the 5 Series. And we're going to have a piece on the 3 Series coming up, and there's some more in the works, and it's great. We just really like getting in touch with the history of BMW because it really is something that other brands don't necessarily have.
And with that said, I'm going to actually get in touch with the history tomorrow morning. I'm going to drive my E28 to work. Just for that. I'm actually just excited because I got my full iPhone connectivity in that thing, which is,
how'd you pull that off?
Bizarre. It was a game of chance, my friend. It was a big game of chance.
Wow.
And it involves a lot of wires. But anyway.
more wires probably than came originally with the vehicle.
On that note. just about. Well, I can tell you this. That 5, I've taken apart almost every 3 Series ever made. Interior components. Every Mini ever made, and that 5 Series is not just twice as you know, better put together. It is in another league. I mean, it is incredible. To take a piece out of that dash requires the removal of components and pieces that you didn't know existed. I mean, it is over engineered to the nth degree.
It's a tank.
It really is. It truly is. So on that note, we're going to have obviously a show for you next week. That's going to be, I would imagine we're going to be knee deep in the Geneva Auto Show at that point.
I think so.
So we're going to have our thoughts around whatever is released there. And of course you can see up to the minute photos, news, and of course, opinion on whatever is out at Geneva on the site, really throughout the week and throughout the weekend. So be sure to check early and check often. One thing I haven't mentioned: if you like our show, be sure to go actually onto iTunes and you can comment there. Give us 4 stars, 5 stars. Hopefully, it's one of those two. I think we have one review right now, which is a 5-star, which is great. I also know that White Riff Radio, which was our sort of forebearer in the Mini world and when a show that I'm on, is been quite successful in getting people to comment and vote positively. But of course, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, suggestions, feel free to drop us a line in the contact section of memberfile.com. If there's anything that you hear that we don't, if there's anything that you want us to talk about, if there's anything that you don't want us to talk about, just let us know. And, you know, comments are always, always welcome.
We read them and we react.
We try to.
Yeah.
So with that said, this is Dave. Cheers.
And Michael, prost.